On page Kuf Yud Tes. The last sentence in the paragraph before the final paragraph of Ma'asa Umlo B'Shar M'Chayor Kazu Ma'yachlish is Tavoso as the structures of Mamre Hara. Every single person knows the truth. There, he says that with all of the avoda that he was talking about, that we learned about by Riches in the Chavs HaTalmidim, of Sumera, not to pay attention to the Rav, I say Toiv, the Iker is to do a lot of Toiv, and that with the Toiv, that the light of the Toiv is going to Mimela cause the Ra to disappear. But everybody knows that our I say Toiv is not that strong, and there's not that much light that is being generated to dissipate and to drive away so much darkness on the Maisa. Mayasa ha'umol, what does the pitiful person do? B'sham chayoros kazu, at the ugly hour. The ugly hour, the ugly time of life means when the desire for something that's ugly takes over the mind and the heart of a person, what are you supposed to do? And b'mayachlis is tavoso, how does a person weaken the taiva? How does somebody weaken the desire? And that his structures that is pushing him, God forbid, to carry out what he's fantasizing, what he's thinking about. So the Rebbe now, this next section here, the Rebbe suggests an Eitzah, also using the Kher HaSeichel, using the mind. Obviously, the only way that a person is able to overcome the desire that begins to infiltrate his heart is by the Moach being Shalot HaLev, is by using a Mahalach and Machshava, a way of thinking, which until now the Rebbe has been developing. The Kher is talking about developing the Kher of his Sarakshas and use of the imagination and the mind and so on. And here too, the Rebbe suggests a mahalach in using our minds to overcome these taivas. Now we have to go through it a little bit because it's a little bit hard to understand. But the Rebbe then, over the course of the next page or so, he gives examples of how to think this way. And then it's a matter of actually trying and putting it into practice. So on the bottom of the page, the last paragraph of Kuf Yud Tes, Al Zeh Noshiv. This is how we will respond to the person who's struggling with what he calls the ugly hours of life. It's the ugly moments of life when those taivas take over. Al Zeh Noshiv, Habit Bekirbecha. My answer is, take a look inside of yourself. Habet Bekirbecha Ish Shameya Umakshiv. You, the person who's listening to what I have to say, who's Makshiv, who's listening carefully to what I have to say. The Tira Shachaiku Ba'adam. And you will see that there's a natural law in how a person operates. Chaiku Ba'adam, it's just the way that a person is. It's natural to a person. What's that? Im yitapel be'ezer achas mirachashay nafshay. That if a person has some sort of a thought, a rachash mirachashay nafshay, something that he is beginning to think about. Im hu rachash shel dimyon. If it's a thought that takes the form of dimyayin, of imagination, rotzen, to want something, a hargosha, a feeling, a hava, of love, yira, fear, a shar hamidus, or any of the midus, av gam imachshavta yitapel, if the person starts to get busy with that machshava, he gets involved in that machshava. If the person has a machshava, first has a thought of some sort. It's not stam a thought. It's not a thought about something. It's a thought. He's thinking about a certain inyan that is part of his. It's an imagination, something of his dimyan, or something that he's feeling, or something that he wants. If the person is gamim machshavta yitapel, if the person pays attention to that machshava, and guess what we would say nowadays, he gets into that machshava, he gets into it, and he allows his mind to become preoccupied with that machshava, that hargosha, whatever. Im tipul machshavta hu baharachash, if the person's machshavas, if his thoughts become preoccupied with that thought, that feeling that came into his heart, into his mind, oz ayidei hatipul yosif harachash lisbol yosef, then the fact that he's now trying to care, that he's tending to this thought, even if his intention is to get rid of it, but the fact that he's paying attention to it, that he gets involved in it, he's metapel in it, the fact that he's paying attention to it can cause it to be mispol more, can cause that feeling or that thought to become more agitated, more leibedik. Like I've told you many times, that the tzaddikim, the Talmid Baal Shem Tov said that the viduyim should be said quickly, not slowly. Just the opposite of what you see in a lot of the yeshivas and a lot of the tzaddikim say that you say the vidui, you go, you know what you're saying. You say al cheshu chinuch v'nachman yisrael, al cheshu chinuch. You don't sit on each one for a long time. And the reason for that is exactly what we're talking about. The tzaddikim said that you have to know what you're saying, and you have to be misvadi. You have to admit and acknowledge that you did that. The time to be metapel in it, there's another way to be metapel in it, to take care of it. But during davening, the tzaddikim said that if you're going to start going into that inyan, he says not only will you not get rid of whatever is that caused that aver to take place in the first place. Obviously, some of those things, but there's a taiva, it's not cheshon lefenecha. You know, when it comes to keep it off, but those things with the shahalev machmadosa that the heart desires, the tzaddikim said that if you start trying to think about it and what you did wrong, so not only will you not correct that inyan, but you'll get more involved in it. And therefore, the tzaddikim said that you say it, you go through it. You don't sit on each one for a long time on the al-chayz. You don't sit on them. The time to do tshuva is, and how to do tshuva is not when you're doing that, because to sit on each of the al-chayts where there's a taiva, I'm not saying again some of them is not taiva, but to sit on those where there's a taiva and to be metapel in that inyan, it's the same thing a person has a scab, has some sort of a wound on his body, so you know that if he's metapel that in it, if he gets involved in it, he pays attention to it. Then 99.99% of the time it gets worse. So if you have like a sore in your mouth and you're constantly visiting it, right? You just check out that, you know, with your tongue, you want to see if it's still there. It is always there. So you check out the season and go, it's not getting there. So when you visit it, it's ma'ir it. It doesn't cause it to disappear. It's ma'ir it. You don't want it to be there. And you're only checking on it to with the hope that it's not there. That's why you're checking on it. So you give a little bit of a peek with your tongue over there by that cold sore, whatever that is you have, and you see that it's there. But you don't want it to be there. And the whole reason that you're checking is that it shouldn't be there. So you're saying al cheshcha talafanecha, you know, the cold sore is there, and you check it to make sure that it's not there anymore, and it's there, and it's ma'ir it. It was quiet a second ago. I mean, it was there, but it was quiet. But when you took a peek and you went over there to check on it, so then it was ma'irid very much. So the Rebbe saying here is that you have desires, there are thoughts, ritzonos, that come suddenly into your mind, into your into your heart. And then you try to be metapel in it. In other words, you try to think about how this is, you know, you want to think this is very, you go into that machshava. So then, adrabe, it can cause a bigger hispailus. When you enter more into the machshava, it causes a bigger hispailus. Yosef harachash l'spol Yosef. The more that your mind becomes involved, the more that your mind gets attached to that machshava, the more hispailus there is in the machshava. The more the machshava is awakened. Yischazik v'yisragesh yoser. Then that machshava that's not a good machshava is mischazik and mischragesh yoser. It becomes stronger. Then ain tipel machshava v'rachash. Now listen to what the Rebbe says. So you think the Rebbe is going to say, well then just ignore it. That's true. Of course, the best thing, ignore it, and then it passes. But the person is already beyond that stage. I'm saying the person is, you can't ignore it, because then that would put all the Bali Musa out of business. You understand what I'm saying? Ignore it. In other words, if the terrorist is, you go to the tzaddik, you go to the Rebbe, and you say, Rebbe, I have this crazy machshava, this crazy taivis. The answer would be, don't have them. So I know, but I have them. So he says, no, you shouldn't. It's not good. You shouldn't have them. So that is that the eitzah? What is the eitzah? Eitzah is to ignore things that you shouldn't be thinking about. You ignore them, not to be metapel in them. You metapel in them, it's not healthy. It gets everything all cooking. The thing is to ignore it. But what the Rebbe, of course, is talking about the ugly moments of life when the machshavas are filling the brain and the filth is pouring into the heart, and to just delete it is not something that you feel that you have within the range of your kaiches at that moment. You don't know what to do. So the Rebbe says with an eitzah. That, as I said before, when we hear it, we can see what is that. But if a person tries it, the Rebbe says that it has a very, very powerful effect upon him, and can mamish rescue him time after time from this marvel that he's challenged with every day of his life. So what do you do? So he says, no, you don't know how to erase the thought of that. You don't know how to delete it. You see, you have to. There's a different way that you have to think about it. There's a different way. He says, because the Yetzirah won't allow you. The Yetzirah won't allow you to eliminate the thought. That's the problem. You would like to eliminate it, but the Yetzirah doesn't allow you to eliminate it. So the Yetzirah wants you to still be involved with this mashav. So the Rebbe says that because of that, there's a way that we have to fool the Yetzirah, and we have to allow, and you have to deal with that machshava, because the Yetzirah is not letting you just erase it. In fact, if you think about erasing, it could be that there's a bigger that it's mispoil and misragish, mischazik even more, gets even stronger. So the Rebbe says like this. The main tipul amachshava barachash is just if you don't allow yourself to go more deeply into this thought, into this feeling, rak oidois harachash, just to think about the feeling, about that thought, not to actually have it. Now he's going to explain what he means, because it sounds initially strange. You don't slip off into that machshava, into that dimin, into that rotsin, into that wanting something that you don't just go into it and continue on in that machshava, but you also don't just eliminate it because you don't have the kaychas to, and that could cause a bigger flare up. So what do? You think about it, not it. That's what he says. Rak oidois harachash, oidois hadinyon. about, concerning that dinyan. Ados haratzen, about the ratzen you're having. Ados ahava v'hir, not the ahava that you're feeling attracted to something, or there's something that you're afraid of that you shouldn't be afraid of. You know, you're afraid of something. You're afraid. You know, you're afraid that if you put on film, you know, you'll lose your job or something. Something, whatever it is, but you shouldn't be afraid. But you're afraid. You don't allow yourself to go into that fear, or allow yourself to go into that ahava, that attraction, or that desire. But you allow yourself, and you force yourself, which you can, because you're not eliminating the machshava. You force yourself to think about the inyan. So the Rebbe says, if you do that, in other words, you don't identify with it. You don't just think in the mode of thinking or feeling. You distance yourself from it. You don't eliminate it. You distance yourself from it. You don't identify with it, and you just think about it. Not you don't think it. You think about it. And we can do that. That's not a hard thing to do. He'll show us what he means.
You think about it versus...
You'll see what he means by thinking about it. All right, that's something that's physical. It was emotional. But it helps with that too. You'll see what he says. He says, "Oz adarab." He says, then you'll see just the opposite. Is I the people of Mashava aldoso by thinking about something instead of thinking it. Then you'll see just the opposite will happen. What? Yikolesh harachash. That feeling, that thought, that dimyum, whatever it was, that's getting you in trouble, will become weaker. It will not become stronger. It will get weaker. As you're looking at this now, not as the person who wants this or desires this or was afraid of this, but a person who is thinking about it almost as an outside observer, like a scientist who's making a study. Not that it's happening to you. There is that machshava, there is that dimyan. But it's not a machshava, a dimyan of yours. It's not... When it's a machshava, a dimyan of yours, when it's your machshava or your dimyan, it's there. It's not something that you're a spectator to or that you're observing. It's you. And you identify with that. And because you identify with that, so then it you become inseparable from it until it brings you down, namish, into God Shabbat, to doing something. But he says there, Rabbi, that if you don't think that way, but instead you think I have about it, like somebody who is looking in from the outside and is asking questions about whether or not you'll see in a minute. You know, what is it that you're thinking about? You know, like you're interviewing yourself. You're interviewing yourself. You're studying yourself regarding such a machshava. You're studying this machshava that you're having. Not I am having this machshava, but what kind of a person has this machshava? And you're studying the machshava in a cold way, like somebody who is taking a census or making a study about such a machshava. So the Rebbe says, not only will you not get more into the machshava, but it will immediately lose its attraction. It will become very, very weak. Yikolish arachash af yech dalagamre. It will become weaker, and often it'll totally disappear. But he explains, we have to go a little bit till the middle of the next page. He explains really more what this is. So let's just read the words and try to understand. Let people of Adrak gam hayestaklus ba'atzma shodem estakel machshavto al ezer rachas shebekirbo. That when you look at it, when you look from the outside at something that you're thinking about, you look as if you're from the outside at a machshava that you have or a feeling that you have. Right? Af machshavto makes arachas as a machshava. It will weaken. Makhe. It will dim. Makhe means to dim. It will dim, it will weaken that rachesh, that feeling, that machshav. Lamash. Says Lamash. doesn't mean about, as opposed to it, about it. The marshal kach lechabedim yainecha tumunas ezei. He says you can experiment with something harmless. Experiment with something harmless. He says kach lechabedim yainecha tumunas ezei. Take in your dimyon, bring into your dimyon, into your imagination, the image of a certain person. Achikarv lecha. The male that you're closest, that somebody that you're close to. A chaver, a good friend, father, a brother, some of you that you're very, very close to. You take that into your mind, that image. Tumunas eze ish, achi karv lecha. The rogel ata bai b'chol eis v'sha. Somebody that you always are with, someone that you're comfortable with, and you're all the time, and you're very, very close to. As kol shetaisef lifal b'harachash, the more you drift off and think about that person or that image that you have in your mind, the more you're in that image and you look at that image in your brain, hind about dimyon, what you're imagining, as you're imagining that person's face or whatever, hamisrachish ata b'cha, that's right now inside of you, af im es machshavtecha teshatev b'pul lezu. Even though you bring your thoughts more into this, tishatim pulazulashav gam eich haisha zeochel, you go further into it. You begin to think about how you could imagine seeing this person that you, this good friend of yours, this seeing this person eating, eich shaisa drinking, eich medaber speaking, as bechol pam yosi yispol v'yisrachev rachsha dimyim b'cha. Then you'll see that dimyon, that picture, the image of your buddy or the image of your father, whatever, becomes more expanded, becomes more. You see that in the going places and talking to him, and you remember playing ball together, you remember learning together, you know, yeah, it's misrachev. Misrachev, it widens and expands. Rachev adimyon b'cha. Rachash adimyon b'cha. That's if you're in the machshava, and you're getting deeper and deeper into the machshava. But try something else. Right? Now you introduced, now with a type of something, you don't, God forbid, try to get that. That happens. But here you're experimenting with something harmless. So you yourself brought this machshava upon yourself of this person that you're very close to. But then he says, try something now different. Now that you have this image in your head, right? You have an image in your head. So he says, you know how to get rid of that image. So once you're ready in it, he says, and it's strong inside of you, it's not going away. So he says, you know, do this. Try this now. Masha'en keng, kisha'en ha'tipol barachsh v'dimyin, rak odos harachash v'odos ha'dimyin. Instead of being metapel, of trying to get rid now, of trying to erase that dimyon, trying to erase that picture, that image. He says, think about the image. V'oidais harachash, v'oidais ha'dimyon, v'kais achshav, and this is what you should think. What does it mean? What does it mean about something? Concerning the image. Im l'dama zaysa t'mun olam. You start to think like this. Should I continue to think about this? Should I continue? Or what is it that I'm thinking about? Why am I thinking about this? And what is it that I'm thinking about? What's the tachlis of spending my time on thinking about this? Ozrakish etas chelach shav aydaisa. The Rebbe says that when you begin to think about it instead of it, you start to think like this. What exactly is this image that I have right now? What is this thing that I'm imagining right now? Shall I be like my father, the Chadaim? Oz minahahabata ba'atzma shatamabit aleha. Then, by looking at this coldly and empirically, from the outside, with the question of what is it that I'm thinking about? And what's the tachlis of thinking about this? And why are you thinking about this? And where is this machshava taking you? And don't you have other things, you know, besides this machshava? By thinking about it in such a way, in a cold, distant way about it, instead of just going in it. So he says, "Ozman ha'bata ba'atzma shatamabit ala miyad tikka ha'tmuna midimyoncha." You will see that the actual image begins to get dim in your brain. It immediately starts to dip, to get dimmer. Okay, chol she'taisef litpal aydaisa, but the more you add, the more that you add, he says, and the more that you think aydaisa yaiser tekolish aftach de lagamre, then if you think about it from the outside, the more you ask these questions and interview yourself regarding that matter, which is no longer you, but it's almost like somebody else that's having this thought, then it will become weaker and weaker and weaker. And then you'll see that after a moment or two, you won't be able to even see the image anymore. Which you're so used to seeing that person, you won't even be able to imagine it. The image will go away from your head, and it's hard for you even to get it back that second. He says, "V'chein hu barachas haratz nahava." And so it is when you have an attraction to something, a feeling that there's something that you like, and that it's not something that's not good for you. L'moshe. So, for example. You have a friend that you really love. So now we're talking about obviously something which is completely harmless. Talking about a chaver. So again, as an experiment, you're talking about a chaver, which is fine. He says, this is a friend that you love. If you just naturally and smoothly just go further and further into your thoughts of this person that you care for very deeply, and with the images that you have in your mind, and you think about, oh, this very great friend of mine, how much I care for him, how much I love this person, and what can I do for this person? I love him so much, he's such a good chavar, maybe I could get him a gift. But to do something for him, this guy is mamish, I love this guy, to do him a taiva. And if you continue to go into this machshava of this person that you care for, how you're going to spend some wonderful time together, you're going to have a beautiful conversation. When you see the guy, you'll enjoy the conversation with him, and so on. Then you'll see that the feelings of ahava, the feelings of love for this friend, are going to get stronger and stronger, and going to be more and more awakened, more agitated, in a good way, because it's a good thing, there's nothing wrong with that. It's going to become stronger and stronger. But v'imloy b'ahava t'tapel, if you don't occupy yourself with the ahava, of going more into the ahava and identifying with the ahava and thinking about getting her a present and doing this and doing that, that it's you. You as the main protagonist of the story with your chava. Rak oidais ahava. You begin to think about the feelings you have for this guy. About the feelings. What does that mean? V'tascha lahabed mashav t'cholov ke'ein zeh. Like this, he says. This is what you think about. Haim be'emes ani ayev hayisai. Do I really, do I really love this guy? You know, why do I love him? Do I, maybe I'm just used to him. And maybe there are a thousand other reasons why, you know, we're so comfortable with each other. But do I really, can I say honestly that be'emes be'emes, I love the guy? Haim be'emes ani ayev hayisai. Again, like a cold person that's interviewing from the outside. Maybe I don't really love him. Mark Shaini Sonya, so the only thing is I don't dislike him. You know, when it comes to emotional, when it comes to guys and girls going out, I'm not talking about, I mean, it could happen at any level, even with mature people, but especially when it comes to immature dating and so on, and that whole parasha. So it's such a, you have some, even if you're discussing with somebody, how many times it'll happen. So they'll be, I'm talking to some girl, comes to tell me that she's with this guy, whatever's going on. So the girl will, so you ask the girl, so what you know. She doesn't know what to do. Am I going to tell my parents? I'm 17 years old, you know, and I want to marry the guy. You know, what am I going to do? My parents are never going to let me. And she's already talking about, you know, 100 miles an hour about, you know, how are we going to be able to, how are we ever going to get married by the time when I turn 18 and when he turns 19, and I'm going to get married. And she starts to, this and all different things. If you stop the person, this girl, and you say, well, why do you want to get married? So she'll say, again, I just told you that, I'm crazy about the guy. I love the guy. And you say, why do you love him? You'll discover very quickly that there's 99% of the time, she doesn't have really good answers to the question. Because it's an oil of the mind, it's the whole thing. It's a rutzen, it's a hava, it's a whatever. It's a hisiris of a hargosh, of a feeling. So then when you start to talk about it, and you start to poke holes in it, and ask questions about it, and you start to analyze and to dissect the hargosh or the ratzon, so then she says, well, I didn't think about it. Like, oh, this, and then when she leaves the room, she's got 1,000 doubts about the guy. 1,000 doubts about him. If you tell the girl, you're not allowed to, this is forbidden love, you're not allowed to do this, you better shut this guy off from your head right now. Why are you saying that? She's getting closer to eloping with the guy. She's, you know, thinking about climbing out her window and running off to Las Vegas. I understand that. That guy is it. So you start to ask all kinds of questions about the guy and talk about the guy that you know, different things. But in a very cold way, just about the Indian. So when she walks away, she's annoyed and upset because something was done to tamper with her strong emotions. The Chevra doesn't do this. They just lose themselves in Machshavos and Taivos and Mitzayos and so on. Machshavos and Taivos. And if a parent has to deal with a situation like this where there's a kid that has one of these in Yonim, and the parents start to scream, you know, that we're going to, and they run over to the kid's cell phone and they try to erase her number, and then or they go over to the computer and they try to get rid of the email and things and to no more. We're gonna, and you know, the parents say, kid, you're not allowed to call her. You're not allowed. Don't you ever call her again. Every time they say, don't you ever call her again, it's for each time you say that, it's two calls. Right? What the Rebbe's saying is that is to question and to look at something from the outside and to ask about it and to say, Lam ani ohev lo. Why do I love this person? Or maybe I don't even love this person. Or actually, any son, I said, maybe it just means I don't hate him. Or in this case, maybe it means I just, maybe it means I'm just, you know, I'm 18 years old and I have active chemicals flowing through my veins, and I want to have a relationship with a young lady because that's fun and exciting and much more interesting than the yonkers and barrels that I'm hanging out with. And nobody has to explain like why that's fun. That's natural. The Baruch Shem made everybody like that. That's natural. That's not only natural. That's normal. That's healthy. It's good. At the right time, the right place, with the right person, it's certainly a good thing. But in this particular situation, so you're this vocha, this young man or this young lady, they have a relationship that they think that they've built up over the course of, you know, of weeks and months of schmoozing and talking and dreaming and thinking and, you know, taking, you know, walks together in the sunset and the all kinds of machshavos and dinyanis, and we're going to get married and we just have to wait and our parents don't understand and the rebbeim don't understand and the Baruch Shem doesn't understand. We don't even understand. Nobody understands. Of course no one understands because it's totally irrational. So the Torah says, yeah, but ahava, you know, that means it's really ahava. Because ahava, I always heard, and I saw on a television show 2 weeks ago that it's irrational. So, to stop thinking that, and to just say, don't feel that way. As the parents say, don't feel that way. You don't feel that way. He says, don't feel that way. You say, don't feel that way. That's machazik. That's machazik, the machshav is machazik, the hagosh, don't feel that way. So they're in that inyan, and they identify themselves with that inyan, and they believe that this is like my life, the rest of my life is going to be with this girl. That's what the guy thinks, the rest of my life. Not even the rest of the week, but the rest of my life is going to be with this girl. He doesn't know what it means to the girl, and what is life, and what does it mean. The rest of all of these hasagas are all not anything that he understands or he even thought about. It's just that he has put himself, you know, like they have those things, like you go to these places, like the amusement parks, you go to these, like, you know, these old towns where they make it like an old town, and they have like from the old days, they have these wooden things, and you put your head in them, and you look like you're from the 1700s. That's what's going on with this. So they have 4,000 movies, these kids, 4,000, it could be with adults too, just, it's a childish thought. So they saw 4,000 movies, and then they just put their heads into the movie. But they do now, like with pictures they do and all these things, you know, they just put their heads in it. And you look at and they're like now in the movie. They're moving around in the movie. So they took the same movie. In the movie, really, the stars of the movie, there's a guy and there's a girl. There's some famous, you know, actor and actress. Instead, they put themselves in the thing, and they see the whole movie with themselves. And they're in that mamish, they're living it, they're living that movie, they're living that, or they hear from other friends about the other friend has this girlfriend, this boyfriend, and then they put themselves into that thing and they're in it. And you say, well, get out of that. You got in, you can get out. And it's like quicksand. The more they think about it, you get deeper and deeper in it. But the Rebbe says, what he's saying here, is that the person starts to ask these pointed questions in a real serious way, in a very deliberate and calculating and analytical way about the situation, not just living it, but about the situation. So then you'll see, he says, that it immediately dims the image and quiets the heart, and often will cause it to simply dissipate and disappear. He says, "V'afsha any ayev asarakshe any sineso uma ahavasi lov she'aveyu." What is this ahava that I have? Where does this come from? This ahava. Where does this come from? This ahava. Maybe I have certain insecurities. Maybe I'm just trying to get out of my house. I don't want to be. I don't want to be with my parents. I'm something. I don't like it with my parents. So maybe I. Maybe I'm just a big baltaiva, and this is a pretty girl. Maybe this, maybe that. but not that you don't see yourself and identify yourself. Like I told you once about, last year, it came up in the Shmuz about, there's a very famous American writer, a big Meshuggah, that a very, very brilliant and perverted person. I don't want to say his name, it's not Erev Shabbosdik. So he wrote a book. He wrote many Chashuva books. I mean, he's considered to be a very Chashuva existentialist, modern existentialist. And he's writing this novel, and it's like this whole complicated involved novel. He's really good. It's a whole complicated involved novel. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the story, and you know how you're reading a novel, you get lost, like in the story, and you feel like these are your friends, and you're in it, right? All of a sudden, he stops in the middle of the paragraph, and he says, "Hi, my name is so and so." His real name of the author. "My name is so and so, and I decided I'm going to pay a visit to my characters in the book." And he stops he sits down like in a luncheonette next to the two characters of his novel, and they look at him and say, "Who are you?" He says, "I just want to tell you guys, you don't really exist. I'm just writing a novel about you. This is a fiction, and I'm your creator. And I'm just writing this about you." And I go, "Come on, what are you talking about? This is we're just about, you know, we're planning our marriage right now." And he just goes like in this luncheonette, and he says, "That's totally absurd. You guys don't exist. I'm telling you, this is just a novel. My name is so and so. I've written the following books. I got a Pulitzer Prize for this. I got this prize for that. My picture's in the newspapers. You can go, you know, I'm telling you, you don't exist. I created you. And the second that I decide that I'm finished with these two characters, I can have you knocked off. When you walk out of this luncheonette, I can have some guy pass by and shoot you down. And you're finished." And then he disappears again, the author. And then the characters are left with this, like, this machshava. They're like left with this. What was that? What happened? What was that? Could that be? Could that be? And like, they're taking themselves, you know, until then they were taking themselves so seriously. They're taking each other so seriously. Like, who knows? Oh, you know, the feelings and that, this and that. And all he did was he just came down for a second. And he questioned their existence. He just questioned their existence. I mean, he just came as a cold outside spectator to something which he knew is fictitious. It's fictitious. The same way when you see the little 17-year-old the 17-year-old girl with an 18-year-old boyfriend, you know, it's fictitious. It's not. It's sweet. It's chaval. It's very nice. And they're beautiful. And Hashem's will should help them. And that they should go in the right way. And then everybody's looking at them. All the bobbies when they walk by and they say, "It's so cute. It's so cute." But it's fiction. It's fiction. What I mean by that doesn't mean it's a lie. It means it's fiction. Fiction is not a lie. It's something that's created from the imagination. And because it's so comfortable and natural and it has about it a certain sweetness. God forbid it gets chas v'shalom into something which is mature games for immature people. So then the person gets deeper and deeper and deeper into it until they go through the heartbreak that 99.999% of the chevra go through, the heartbreak of how that falls apart, and then having to, you know, be stuck with certain machshavas, not know how to deal with them, and feelings, and then, you know, burning letters and giving back presents and pictures and then this. It's a very, very painful parasha that dealing with over the years with guys and girls, literally hundreds and hundreds of times. This is, but each guy and girl thinks that this is Romeo and Juliet. There's never been anything like this in the entire history of mankind, what we have with each other. It's Rachmanis. And it can get much more dangerous than Rachmanis, obviously. When they started to take steps in the wrong direction, sudden the parents come and say, you can't see each other. You can't see each other. You can't talk to each other. So it's hard. The parents see that this is something that's taking up so much time. It's taking. They like the girl. They like the. But it's nice. These are nice girls. Nice boy. You know what? And if you'd be 21, and if you'd be 22, and she'll be 21, we'd be very happy. Tonight, she's a nice girl. It's a nice boy. We have no problem with it. But you're 17 years old. You're 18 years old. What are you talking about? You have to concentrate on school, on yeshiva. You have things to do. What are you doing? What are you getting into this Indian now? It's very, very nice. Just wait. For 2 years, for 3 years. You ever try doing that with an ahava that you or something that you want? Even if there's a piece of cake you want, and someone says, next week. It's not so pleasant. It's a piece of cake. It's not. We're not talking about a human being. Just a piece of cake. Why don't you wait? Next week you can get the same cake. It'll be on sale. You don't have that. Don't have it now. Next weekend. But you know, we spent a lot of time together. You know, we know each other. We have very strong feelings for each other. The cake. It's very hard for us to separate at this point in our lives. So you tell your kid, you know what? I have no problem with this. But in 3 years, you know, in 3 years you can get married. In 3 years you can have a relationship. The kid looks at you like you're from outer space, and he thinks, you never in your life felt anything from mommy, that's why. Because if you ever felt anything from mommy, you wouldn't be able to say such a dibur. And you wouldn't... So the parent doesn't know what to do, because the parent knows that this is a novel. That his kid's a character in a novel. And he's watching this novel or this movie unfold, and it's getting scary. It's getting scary because it can lead to a lot of crazy things. And it could ruin his kid's life. It could ruin the girl's life. It could ruin the boy's life. And the parent's watching this, and the parent doesn't know what to do. So the natural thing to do is to just try to say stop. And sometimes parents don't have a choice but to sabotage these things and to try all kinds of things because there are kids that you simply can't reason with. You can't, that they're not open to hearing anything at all, and the parents have to sabotage them, whatever it is to do to try to ruin that situation and to deal then with the kid's anger and so on. This is a complicated parsha. But if that kid would sit down, if the 17-year-old that's deeply and desperately in love and is trying to plot out, you know, how he's going to get married, Ben Hazmanim or something like that, you know. If he would sit down with a good therapist the parents get crazy about it because it's their kid. So therefore the parents are very, very involved and attached to the situation. And because of that, they could say a lot of wrong things because they're in it with the kid. The parents are part of the novel. You understand? They're characters in the play. They're characters in the movie also. There's a whole cast. So the parents also get like wound up in the film or in this drama. But if you get a good therapist, it doesn't have to be it could be a very chosh of a person that's not a professional, but a professional knows how to do this. And so somehow, some way, the kid was able to get this kid, not mommy and daddy, able to get this kid to this person who's you know, taking notes and asking questions. I'm just using this seer as a way to try to understand what the Rebbe is saying about the relationship. Someone who's not in the novel, someone who's outside, who's a spectator, who's watching this thing unfold. Emotional. I'm just pulling at Mishalim. I don't know. I'm sure you have better ones to try to understand. If you're, you know, movies are very, very powerful. Movies are very powerful. Those images are powerful. You could remember a movie that you saw, something made a strong impression on you. You could remember it from 20, 30, 40 years. You could remember a movie. you can't remember the name of this week's parasha, but you could remember, you know, you could remember a movie. And you know, you're sitting by a movie, especially if they turn the lights out and everything like that. Because you know, turning up the lights is that nothing else is there, right? Just you and the image that's on the screen. You can get so completely, totally lost in that film that you cry, right? You cry. In other words, this one was diagnosed with terminal, cancer. Your favorite person in the movie, and they loved each other. We're going to get married, and now they found out that that he has cancer. So then you start to feel like, you start to get like start the inside, and you get. And the girls in the place are already howling, and you're trying like to be a guy, but it's getting to you, it's getting to you. It's so chaval that they just, they come from such horrible families, and they were able to find each other, and it was like after an hour of all this beautiful, diburim and walking together, and then boredom in Central Park, what I'm saying, all that stuff. And now she has cancer, So you, or he has whatever. They both have chris. so now you start to get very worked up, and you could even cry, and you can get those people who are experts at creating these things, that these are very, very brilliant people with very great imagination, and using all kinds of amazing techniques that they studied and they thought about for many, many years, how to get somebody in a dark theater or in his living room watching this thing, how to get that person to become the characters on the screen, and to befriend them, and to be part of them, and to live vicariously through them. Ad kedei kach that you have dimyonis and taivas and machshavas and all kinds of things that belong to the fictitious characters in this movie, and you're crying, or you're all kinds of types, so you have these, some kid watches this violent movie, and he figures he's gonna shoot a couple of his friends or something. The crazy things that are going on because of that way of identifying. That's what a powerful film does to a person. It takes a person away from. You're no longer an outside spectator. You're not watching something, right? You're not watching something. But imagine if you would be in the studio. You'd be in the studio, and you're sitting on a chair, and it says your name on it. It says Moshe. They always have names. Their names on the chairs. Everyone. It's a very big thing. And you're sitting on the chair, and you have spent the last year and a half writing this or producing this, right? You're Isaac in this, and you get up every morning, whatever. And you get dressed and you go to work and you come to the studio. It says the name also by the parking spot, and you go there. And you get to work, and then the actor and the actress comes in, whatever, cursing and angry because they had to get up at 10 o'clock in the morning or something. And it was just, after all that drinking and drugs, it's very hard. And they come to work, they're coming to work, and you have to go over the script, right? And they're acting it out, and you say, wait, stop, cut, whatever they say, I don't know what they say, and stop. And then the director says to the actor that you're tilting your head the wrong way, or you have to show try to show more of an empathy for your co-star or something like that. More, so you say okay. Do you think that the producer, the director, that's Isaac and that malach at that time? So now the actors go back and he's tilting his head more in Central Park, let's say, right?
and he's tilting his head more, and he's got the right look, and he's talking to his girlfriend. So you think that the director starts to cry? He starts to cry. This is so beautiful. Not him, not the actor, not the actor. Of course, no, nobody that's walking around. You have some schlub pushing a broom over there, cleaning up, you know. He's pushing the broom, and he's watching this. He's also not getting into it, right? Now, then you take the thing, they finish up the whole thing, and they put it in the movie, and the same schlub with the broom. He's now in the theater, right? He wants to see what comes out. How did it come out? So if he's a little bit of a balsaich, and he was there every day sweeping back and forth in the studio or wherever they were doing it, he's going back and forth. He was icy with the cameras. He's doing this. He's a little bit of a balsaich. Then when he sees the whole thing, everybody else in the movie is going to be crying. But it's like, because why? Because if he still's a balsaich and he has his saich, then he sees this as somebody. As he originally saw it, which was a guy that was watching in a very cold, detached, scientific way. And it continues to exist in his mind, even when he's in the theater with everybody else crying. But it is possible that if he's not a balseichel, that now that he watches the whole thing, he can start crying also. This is the craziest thing in the world. It's the craziest thing in the world. I think that's what happens when people go into theaters. You go, and maybe even a certain way, if it's a live show, something like that, it could be even more powerful. It could be even more powerful. I remember that when I was a kid, you ever hear there's a thing called Mary Poppins? You heard of it? Yeah, okay. I mean, it's a famous thing. So I had an aunt, Alel Shlomo, lived in Pittsburgh. And my mother would take myself and my sister, like twice a year, my mother's sister. No, but she was a terrible Baal Sisurim for the Milchama, terrible, terrible tsaris this lady had. She couldn't walk, and she was up to Brach, and she was beaten by the Germans in Achshamon. It was a terrible thing. So my mother would take us a couple times a year to go to Pittsburgh. And we went on a plane. It was a very exciting thing. And I remember that this. I remember going with my mother in Pittsburgh. My mother took my sister and myself to see Mary Poppins. We saw that in the theater in Pittsburgh, Squirrel Hill. There are Jews that live over there. And we went to this theater. I remember exactly, you know, because it was like my first like big movie. I was a very little kid. Now, I remember it was Mesa Chereshim. And I can remember sitting in this place, this theater. And they were acting out a scene. And all of a sudden, they start to sing, because it was a musical. Now, I don't know how this stuff works. Just like, you know, just a spoonful of sugar, like they start to, like, sing. And I remember thinking, whoa. and I'm watching this thing, and then they're talking about stuff, and they're doing the acting, and then 5 minutes later, all of a sudden, like, something else pops up, another song. And then they're all dancing, like 50 people are doing things. And I remember being so confused about that. And I asked my mother when we were walking out and we were going back to my aunt, I said, how did they think that song like that? In the middle of talking, like, why did they start singing like that? What were they singing? And how did all those people dance like that together on the spot? They all just started dancing. Chim chimney, chim chimney. Like, you know, they all start dancing and stuff. And not one person like danced different than the other person. And each one was just on their own. And, you know, my mother's used to me like asking my kids, you know, ask these kashas, and I'm like, you know, we get home, you ask daddy, I don't know, stuff. But it's like, you know, so my mother's explaining to me that it's not real. It's a movie, and somebody writes this, and they made this up, and it's a story that they made up. And I remember thinking that this is, you mean what you're saying, Mommy, you're saying is that these are liars. These are liars. The whole thing is a lie, and you're taking me watching to see people who are liars. I remember feeling it so strongly. It's a lie. How did two people start singing the same song at the same time? We're not talking about Shira Sayam, you understand? That's not Oz Yoshe. We're talking about Mary Poppins. So how do they start like chim-chimming together like that? Everybody, like the same niggin. How do they all come up with that niggin together? So I remember Mommy sitting there thinking, I guess they all knew this niggin somehow. Maybe they did this before this movie. And now they're just chazing over the nigga, you know, together. But it looked like too good. And the dancing and everything. So you realize that afterwards it's all, when you wake up and you realize, or somebody wakes you up, that it's all fiction. It's all somebody making up a story about people who are happy, or about people who are laughing, about people who want to sing and dance. People are not just schmoozing and all of a sudden they start singing and dancing. You ever see that in your life? You have a husband and wife, they're standing there talking in the kitchen about paying insurance, all of a sudden it becomes a musical. Did that ever happen in the world? Such a thing, that never happened in history. And yet people are paying good money, and they're going to go on Broadway, or they're going to go to a movie, and they're going to watch, like a husband and wife talking about insurance, all of a sudden, oh, insurance. And he goes, oh, insurance. And they start to like sing this niggin. Nobody ever did that in the history of the world. And yet when you're there and you're watching it, you get like taken, you get totally in it. And you feel like, you know, I got to get insurance. Because if I get insurance, I'm going to start to sing the gunim and be happy, whatever. That's the difference between being an outside spectator and watching something and asking, is this, like I was asking my mother, is this, what is that? And you don't have any hergish for it, as opposed to being in it and living through it in such a way as if you're a character in the novel or a character in the play. All right, we'll continue. We'll just finish this up in the next few minutes.